Alan.
Grez.
Here. And welcome to Rise of the Robots. Just before the start of the episode, just a quick reminder that if you want to hear our dulcet tones elsewhere, well, good luck finding it with Grez, because he's not on a podcast at the moment. He's mine! All mine!
Yep, I've actually just had the gag taken out of my mouth and the handcuffs taken off just so I can record this.
And meanwhile, if you want to hear me elsewhere, you can listen to the DCAU podcast, where Rebecca and I discuss DC animated movies.
And on the occasion, you can find me there. If you miss me.
Christmas! Yeah, it's Christmas.
Grizz. Hey, pal.
What is it?
Hey,
why are you here? Ruining my Christmas. Oh, what have you done now?
Well, you know how I said we'd finish Robot Wars Extreme Warriors, and then that would be us done for 2023.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I can't fucking count.
Okay. Right, well,
we need we need help. We need something that lasts a week.
A one-off, if you will.
Do you know what we need?
Do you know who we need?
I swore we'd never talk about them again.
Every time they think we're done, they reel us back in.
We thought we'd been there and done that. But I'm Alan.
I'm Grizz.
And this week we're discussing Wonderbirds Court Robots. So, yes, so this is Plunderbird Talk Robots, which is a documentary.
Mockumentary?
Yes. Which was made... It was made a few years ago, but it was actually released on Amazon Prime...
This time last year?
This time last year, yeah.
Yeah.
So...
It's like the 5th of December, like last...
So it is available on Amazon Prime for £4.50.
To rent.
Which meant that we spent £9 on this shit. Oh, well. So the documentary is about 45 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
It's Plunderbird.
It's Plunderbird. Unfortunately, that's Plunderbird in both the best and worst ways.
Yes, because we, well, instead of like trying to describe it, we'll start off with the first skit, which pretty much sums up the level of comedy that we're going to get.
Uh-huh.
In this, so we have Mike and Brian sitting down to watch their own documentary. Mike runs in with a bowl of popcorn. Trips and throws the bowl of popcorn all over Brian. Brian just sits there completely still, and then Meg sits down with the rest of it and then starts trying to eat popcorn off of Brian. So this is how we start the doc with one of these little skits. And thinking that may have been like the end of it, but we don't see the end of it. We see this through the rest of the documentary with the diminishing returns sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I will admit they're not all bad. There's some that I definitely chuckled at, but some some are reoccurring and they weren't funny to begin with.
The only issue I would say that I have on the whole of this is now I'm going to caveat this with saying I edit audio, not video, and I know that editing video is multiple times harder.
Yeah.
Some of the editing in this documentary is questionable. I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt and assume that whoever edited it is not a professional editor.
Mm-hmm. Because remember they were also trying to shop this around on one of those websites like GoFundMe or whatever.
Yeah.
And they kept saying, we just need just a little bit of cash. And it's like, okay, like, they'll probably only need, like, a couple of hundred. No, they were one 10 grand, and they got, like, 700 quid.
I mean, I can see where you'd, where the 10 grand could have been spent, honestly.
Yeah.
The one
but definitely
thing,
it wasn't on editing.
I mean, the one thing as well, well, one thing you'll notice about our podcast, if you ever listen to live versions of our podcast as opposed to the version that we put out online.
The radio edit.
Yeah. You'll notice that we edit out all the ums and ahs. That's because it's very difficult to do it in a single take and sound spontaneous. The issue is that because there's bits of this...
You just said twice in that sentence there.
Exactly. oh no, I'm triple H-ing. So
relax. Take a breather.
But yes, there's a lot of ums and ahs in the edit. There's, the, you know...
We don't
it looks like that... The majority of this was filmed in kind of two parts. One was them pissing around in their garage, and one of them was at Extreme. Well, I think it was. It is now what's known as Extreme Robot. Extreme Robots. It was the
Robot
official
Wars
Robot Wars live show when that happened, which was before the reboot, I believe. There's also a part that takes place at a school event.
Yes.
And also the formatting's a bit strange. So we start with the origins of the team, how the team came about. Basically, they're all neighbours.
We get like fact sheets for everybody. So Mike Onslow, height, short, weight, above average, hair, not much, shoe size, 11, chest, ? Waist, NA, IQ, 32. It was a weird angle there. And then Brian Kilburn, fact sheet, height, 5'2", weight, 10 stone, hair, wish, shoe size, 9, chest, 42 inches, waist, 32 inches, IQ, 174. So that's a nice way to kind of set up, essentially, most of the jokes for this. But the thing is, like, just before we get on with this, I seem to remember Brian being the dumb one in Plunderbird.
Yes. I mean, that said, let's be honest, neither of them are dumb.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well, the playing dumb then.
The weirdest part of this is, I can tell you the bits of the documentary I liked. Mm-hmm. It's the bits where they weren't playing the Plunderbird boys.
Yeah. Because it was Brian that essentially goes out and does, like, all of these interviews. And does it straight.
Yeah.
But... yeah, as I say, like, we'll go over the kind of some of the jokes, maybe not do every joke, but, like, some of them were better than others, so I'll give them some credit.
Also, I take it one of them, I think it might have been Mike Onslow, must have worked on Doctor Who. There's a lot of Doctor Who props around. A lot of Doctor Who props around.
I know, so either he worked on it or he was just a massive fan, but, like, would a massive fan have an entire life-size Dalek in their shed?
Probably
yes would be the answer if you were just a massive fan, but, like, where the hell would you get one of those? So we get the Plunderbird stats. So it's had 75 battles, it's won twice, it's drew 0 times, losses, who's counting, and robots built, 5.
And we actually get to see their trophy cabinet, including a few collected trophies such as part of Sergeant Bash.
Yep, they weren't sure where they got that and might use it as a doorstop.
Mm-hmm.
See, this segment was quite interesting, but also kind of sad at the same time, because they start going through what they still have of all the Plunderbirds. So Plunderbird 1, they just have one of those middle docks that they have for the interchangeable weapons. That's fair enough, because then they mentioned that they used the same outer
Chassis.
chassis for Plunderbird 2, which was a relatively good nick still. And then Plunderbird 3, they have like one spike. Plunderbird 4 is proudly, like, seemingly hanging like just above the workbench. And Plunderbird 5 is just a random wheel.
Well, to be fair, that is because Plunderbird 5 got torn to pieces.
Yeah, okay,
They
I'll give them that.
did the job.
So, as you kind of alluded to earlier, they started talking about the teams and how they were next door neighbors of each of them that were the team members that kind of joined them throughout their career in robotics. And the look that they came up with ended up being completely by accident. Because the gloves they wore while they were making the robot, because like the metal would constantly cut their hands. They picked up the sunglasses because they were cheap on the way to the recording, and the belts were made because Mike Onslow can do that shit. So apparently it was all completely by accident.
Oh, joy.
Yes. So the few trophies that they do own are the best design from season one,
Which is for
the
the
sport,
modular design, which does make sense.
yep, which they never got to use. But I mean, it was still a design. Sportsmanship award for season two, one of the few times where Nemesis Deator did not win that. And then some trophy that they don't really talk about
It's
from
like
the
a
live scene.
live scene. Well, I don't know if it was like a joke one because they were doing presenting work on the live show, so they won a fight or something like as a gimmick thing, or I don't know.
While scanning the garage where we seen the giant Dalek and then the Cyberman head and all that, we also see Junior. That was nice. That was nice to see
Junior.
Junior. Yeah. From Techno Games.
Oh, yeah.
Then they do a skit with the landlord being Jurassic Park. That was odd. And
It's
then
funny. They managed to perfectly imitate my exact reaction. Absolutely nothing.
it's the way that like nothing else came of this. Like I thought the end of the documentary would have been something along the lines of like the landlord came back and they had to run away or something, but this was just, it was almost like a way to show the sort of work area without really just going, here's our work area.
Hi, Alan here, just taking a quick break from the action. Chris and I would like to thank a couple of the people that made this podcast possible. First, we would like to thank Greg Watt for the logo.
Our theme song is also by Technomax. You can find their music online at YouTube. That's just search for Technomax.
That's Technomax spelled TEKNOAXE. We then get to the section where they interview, quite frankly, a random collection of people.
Yeah, it is quite random.
So, not that that's a bad thing, having done an two episodes, which is just Alan goes around and randomly interviews people.
Yeah, sorry, Grizz goes around and randomly interviews people.
To be fair, at least you had a producer on that.
Yeah.
So, also throughout this, they do gags of Mike is also there, but he's not paying attention, and he asks the exact same question.
Yep. Which, fun funny the first time, but then they did it through every interview, and it's like, well, that's ruined that.
Yeah. So we get interviews with the Behemoth team, apart from Ant, who we do see Ant being interviewed in, like, a stock footage bit, but we don't actually hear it.
Mm-hmm.
We also get an interview with Rate 8 from Skeletor, and explanation of, like, how Skeletor's still running, the fact that Skeletor at this point has climbed, it must be like something like 10 kilometers or something like that.
Yeah.
And also the explanation, if you've ever went to Extreme Robots, Skeletor drives around in a car now, and we get the explanation as to why.
Yeah, because it was too heavy.
Mm-hmm. We then see...
I don't think Skeletor was still, like, actually climbing a rope. I thought it was just there for show now. Like,
no,
so
it was...
Quite,
no,
that's
it's,
quite interesting.
It's certain... Well, admittedly, this was pre-pandemic, but they were certainly doing that in Extreme Robots when I went down to Bolton.
Mm-hmm.
Which was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So we see the Iron Tron operator being interviewed.
Yeah, Iron Tron was pretty cool. Let's talk a bit about Iron Tron, since we don't think we'll ever see him again, so give him his flowers. So Iron Tron is this giant, essentially mech suit that shoots fireworks.
Yes. And it's incredibly heavy, and it's got a lot of lights and batteries.
Yeah, that is super cool. And apparently it was made out of plastic, but still cost like $5,000 to make because, well, no shit, just look at the thing.
Oh, it's incredible looking.
And so they ask him, have you ever fell over in it? He's like, no, not yet. And then they ask, do you think Mike would fit in it? And they go, no. There's an awful lot of people like taking jabs at Plunderbird, like whether they were asked to or not. But also, like, just watching this, I noticed in the background there's an R2-D2 there as well. So next time I go to one of these events, I'm just gonna steal that. That's mine now. It belongs to me. I'll just walk out with it under my arm and go, actually, I think you'll find I came here with this.
Okay.
I mean, they can't prove it, then. So, Iron Tron.
Anyway, one thing we do get to see is old school Matilda.
Yeah, she beats the crap out of a bunch of lightweights.
Isle lightweights or fella weights. It's not quite clear. But it seems to be like that. It was one of those, let's have all the lightweights fight Matilda.
Yeah, because at first it looked like it was just meant to be a lightweight melee, but then by the time, like, because it smash cuts in the middle of this fight, and then it's just Matilda is just wrecking shop.
Well, thankfully not using her disc.
I think she used it a little, but, like, I think this is kind of back in those days when it was, okay, like, they can speed up to X amount of RPM.
Well, I think what you'll actually... Because that was something that... Because they hint at this at the end of the kind of Extreme Robots segment. They hint that they're building a new arena, which is the spinner-proof arena they now have.
Yeah. I know, because I remember for a period there was just absolutely no spinners, and now spinners are quite prominent.
Well, that was one of the reasons why spinners were so effective in the reboot, is no one had been able to run a spinner for so long that people stopped armoring against them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, because that makes a ton of sense, just in the way how, like, some robots in, like, say, like, the first season just get absolutely slaughtered. Yeah. And then, like, they come back and they're so much more defensive against them, like, in the next season because, okay, now they've seen what a spinner can do and now they know how to defend against it.
So we then meet Dave, who made all the infamous Plunderbird music. I wish I could tell you what happens in this segment, but I can't hear half of it because
Yeah, the audio was bad and the camera work was a bit weird. So they go, right, behind this door is where the mind and the idea behind the Plunderburn theme came, and then Michelangelo walks out of the toilet. Okay, that one, admittedly, I chuckled at.
Yeah.
So then they go to a different room and go, this is the room. And so they chap on the door, they speak to Dave. But then they do it in such a weird way where Dave is just sitting there, arms folded, and then the two Plunderbird boys are, like, looming over him, and the whole segment is shot that way. And it was really strange. So he kind of asks him, like, what made you want to do the Plunderbird music? And he's like, well, if you says either do it or we break your legs. And then anytime Dave says, oh, yeah, like, it was great to work with you two gentlemen. They would give him 20 quid. So anytime he said something nice, they would hand him another 20 bucks.
This is and actually then, where the 10 grand was meant to go.
Yeah, probably. to pay off Dave. Then at one point, like, it just kind of smash cuts, and then Meg is just dancing about with headphones on. Which, again, admittedly kind of funny. It was just so out of nowhere. Then he says, right, make us some new theme music or we'll kill your tortoise. Dave says, I don't have a tortoise. And then they kind of talk to each other and go, okay, make us new music and we'll give you a tortoise. So then Dave replies, has it got a shree, Mick?
Of course it has.
There you go. So then they play the shree, Mick song all the way through, including the unheard third verse.
Well, to be fair, it is the only thing that... that they do not have to worry about any of the rights for.
Yeah. Which is weird that we didn't hear the actual season 2 Plunderbird theme.
Oh, don't worry, I'll cover that in this episode.
Good, good.
So, we then get on to the educational and safety aspects of Robot Wars. So, we have an interview with John Finley, who's in charge of the Ripper team, runs Extreme Robots, and also runs educational events.
Mm-hmm. See, though, these are aimed at kids. I would totally do one of these, because these look pretty fun.
Oh, I absolutely. Though it does seem a bit weird that they then fight with one of the small versions of Ripper.
Yeah, I find that hilarious. It's like, okay, build your little cardboard bot. Now go fuck yourself, because here comes Ripper.
They talk about nearly destroying a wall and going through a patio door. And then they talk about, well, maybe the best thing is to start with a small robot.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, is what's happening with, like, Bugglebots and various other kind of smaller competitions are becoming quite regular.
Yeah, they break out a couple of, like, the small robots, which actually look pretty cool. One of them clearly called Predator, and the other one was unnamed little robot.
Yep.
They also go on to talk about Lego Technics and how they're actually pretty good at creating, like, a sort of prototype. To be honest, you're probably not wrong, because they have, like, actual proper working motors and all that shit in Technics.
Well, I know that there is, like, I'm sure that there is actually a Lego championship.
Yeah. Well, that would make sense.
Yeah.
I mean, there is, I've seen online that there's a kit that you could buy. It's to build, like, a digger or something like that. But you can actually make Johnny Five out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up the kit and it's like 250 quid. It's like, as much as I want Johnny Five in my life, I'm not willing to pay that. So maybe I'll keep an eye on the kit, and if it ever comes down at a reasonable price, then I can make Johnny Five.
So with then,
Johnny Five will be alive.
Then the last 5 minutes is a bit... a sorted crap.
Yeah, we get the reminiscing segment where they just kind of...
Which I would have thought was the whole point of the podcast, so, or the documentary, so I don't see how this is a separate segment.
Yeah, so they don't even really... Oh, yeah, we get this one segment, I forgot about this, by MADEUPTV, and it was like, right, please tell me that made-up TV isn't a real thing, and this was just... This was just for them, because see if this was a real like channel, like I hope it died ages ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then it's just as you say, just random crap. The little skit they did was kind of funny, where they're like, I wonder if people still remember us. So there's this guy walking past, they stop him and go, here, you, do you know who we used to be? And he looks confusedly at them and goes, Plunderbird? And he's like, yeah, don't you forget it.
To be fair, they were wearing Plunderbird shirts at the time.
Yeah, that's that makes it the joke funny. And then they just kind of sell the robot live shows at the end. And then we cut back to them in the living room and Mike eats popcorn at Brian's ear.
Ear popcorn.
Extra toppings.
Anyway, right. Is it worth £4.50? Fuck no.
No,
it's not. Is it nice to at least, you know, have one last hurrah? And there are, I'm not going to sit there and say it's a bad documentary.
Mm-hmm.
It needed an editor.
Yeah, well, it's a mockumentary, remember, so...
Yeah.
Those are slightly different. But, yeah, I think, like, maybe could have used a bit of a better edit. In fact, what I'm going to try and do while we kind of wrap up here is I'm going to take a look and see if I can find who did edit it in the credits. Because if it was just those two, then okay, I'll give them some credit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but I'd say it was a fun little watch. I mean, it was only 45 minutes. It didn't completely waste my time. I feel like maybe if it was any longer than that, it might have. But yeah, it wasn't bad at all. So let's see, crew. We've got the director. Assistant director. The editor was David Cheshire. So, I suppose maybe he done the best he could do with what he was given. But, like, yeah, as we were saying, like, that segment with John Finley where he talks about what they do, like, with the kids and all that. Like, they build, like, little cardboard robots, design them, and then put them in an arena with Ripper to get slaughtered. But that segment was the worst sounding interview of the whole thing.
I mean, it's a difficult one because, as we know, the second that you are outside doing an interview, you have no control on the surrounding area. I'm still shocked with, I think it was the Bolton episode, I was still shocked how well that segment sounded because of just the amount of noise in the background, the music that was playing. I'm still shocked that that's listenable.
Yeah, I'm shocked that the interviews that I'd done at RoboNerd came out even half decent.
Yeah.
Granted, I almost stuck my fucking phone down half the interviewees' throats, like, to make sure to pick them up as good as possible. But like, when there is like hundreds of people rabbling on behind you, there is that kind of concern. But it just looked like because like in some of the interviews they had a microphone.
Yep.
But then in this interview with John Finley, they didn't have a microphone. I don't know if he just forgot it or thought, oh, it's got to be okay. But especially when you're recording in a place where kids are, and kids don't don't realize how loud they're being. Yeah, that's kind of what made that interview struggle, especially since like this was probably like the nicest part of the documentary because of the, you know, like what's behind it with John wanting to kind of help kids get into like engineering and robotics at a young age. And he's like, I assume that's what you're saying, but I can't really hear you.
Anyway, we will be back next year where we'll be kicking off with Robot Wars Series 6.
Yes.
Which has nothing interesting happens. There's absolutely no massive sources of debate.
None that I can think of.